Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on, let
it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Well, it's that moment. We've been thinking about this for ages. When the suggestion that this next guest, our next superstar of a guest, was willing to come on the show, we said, oh, yes, please. And literally, we've been counting down the minutes ever since. Vassos, over to you.
Our next guest is a literal legend, one of the true dire greats of music over the past five decades. His 10th studio album, One Deep River, is out now. So please welcome the ever popular, often jocular Mark Knopfler.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, and thank you, chap, for, well, that's a certain... That's a beautiful intro. I mean, one of the legends of the music business, isn't that something?
I love it. And I just nipped out for a pee, and I came in, and you two were talking football. How did you get Mark Knopfler onto football, Vassos?
Well, because Mark, you played at St James's Park a couple of weeks ago in front of everybody there.
No, football?
Well, I didn't. I went. I walked out onto the pitch, you know, and there were a few. What's that old croc doing out there? Well, no, it was actually that we were launching the Teenage Cancer Trust record because the theme tune there is my tune from Local Hero and Going Home, and that is the NUFC theme tune. But then somebody bright, in who's one of the organisers, suggested that we do a version with guest musicians, guest guitar players, and boy, did we get some. And so that took a while.
Who turned up for you?
Oh, you name it. Okay, so first one in was Pete Townsend, of course, because of that. And then there was Eric Clapton, and then there was Jeff Beck, and then there was David Gilmour, and it just went on like that. And I'd come in the morning, and Bruce Springsteen would have sent a bit from America, and it was out there. It was fantastic. And I said to Guy Fletcher, was doing it, helping me doing it, I said, Guy, this thing's going to get long. We're going to have to add more bridges and more verses and things. And so that's what we did. And it's got Ringo and his son on drums, and who were fantastic.
Black Sabbath, yeah. Queen, Beatles, Stones.
Yeah, you name it.
Wow.
Sting on bass, and it was just ridiculous. But it all sounds, thanks to Guy, it all sounds good. And I think it wasn't none of these, in the end, I mean, they weren't my ideas. I think Mike Reed had a lot of the ideas, and he was part of the Cancer Trust. And it was, everything was split 100% between the Teenage Cancer Trust in the UK and Teen Cancer in America, because we were getting contributions from Joe Bonamassa, from Joan Jett, from people who were in the States, you know, and they were all great. So it was fun putting it together, certainly.
And Roger's responsible for both those charities, isn't he? Because he did Teenage Cancer Trust here, and because the Who are massive in America, he said, well, let's do it over there. And I don't know why, and it's not a soapbox for now, but I don't know why he's not been put forward for a knighthood when lots and lots of other people haven't had one. He's been doing this forever, and he's a brilliant rock and roll guy. I don't understand. And he's never been a tax exile. Oh, none of that stuff. I don't understand it. Anyway, not a conversation for today, but I just thought I'd drop it in there. You've also been selling some guitars for charity as well. Congratulations on that. Some amazing guitars went under the hammer earlier this year. 8 million quid plus. What was your first guitar? Forget those ones. What was your first guitar?
It was a Fender Stratocaster imitation.
Wow.
So it wasn't a Fender. it was the kind of that colour. Had to be red because of Hank Marvin's red Stratocaster.
With a white scratch plate?
Yeah, with a white scratch. Actually, the Hofner, it was a Hofner. It had a black scratch plate, but that didn't bother me. I was over the moon to have that. But it was a big stretch for me, Dad, because it was 50 quid.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the nerve to ask him for an amplifier. So,
how many of us, Mark, had electric guitars, but we couldn't afford the amplifier? It's like getting a 5-iron and not being able to afford any balls, which was also a situation as well, wasn't it?
About 555 people I've met so far, yeah.
It's so funny. We used to play, but it's quieter, wasn't it? It's quieter than an acoustic guitar.
Oh, it's quieter that way, all right, yeah.
And were you like a duck to water with the guitar? Did you take to it straight away?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to want to do it. It's hard at first. You're trying to make your fingers go places they don't want to go.
I know.
And then finger picking afterwards was harder as well with your other hand. And that was when I got playing in... I used to borrow friends' acoustic guitars and go and play in folk joints and where I learned how to do a sort of a singing nun finger pick.
She was great, wasn't she?
But it was, and then later on in Leeds I met... a guy called Steve Phillips, who was a proper blues singer, and he was playing National Steel guitars, and so I still wanted the amplifier and everything. I still hoping to play in a rock band and everything, but I was also playing this finger picking, folky bluesy thing. And so the great thing about knowing Steve in Leeds was that I could get back into the country blues, you know.
Yeah, so cool. I was having some fun last night, just looking around various things, getting in the mood for today to welcome you to the show. So I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for coming. And I was looking at you in the Rolling Stones 100 Greatest Guitarists of All Time. Now, I know you don't care about this, but I do. Right? And you're in there at number 27. You're talking about finger picking. Glenn Campbell isn't in here at all. Now, he was...
Oh, he was superb.
I mean, come on. Hello, Rolling Stone. Knock on the door. Where's Glenn Campbell?
Yeah. And Glenn also, he introduced into that sort of, you know, the wrecking crew, the session people who made all those great records. Glenn got in, essentially introduced the capo to the guitar, which is the little bar you screw on the back and you can change the key of the songs by just moving it up and down on to a higher or a lower fret. And, of course, a lot of the old session men were a bit sniffy about that because they thought, oh, we don't need no capo. We can play anyway. But the fact is, the capo was a great thing because you could get all those open strings working and you could play the cowboy shapes, but play them higher up the neck.
Yeah.
And what a great idea. Mm. Excuse me. So, I mean, he played that. A lot of those Glenn Campbell lines are classic in pop music.
It's the same with the Stones, isn't it? Because, I mean, Ronnie and Keith often play with that open C tuning.
Yeah.
Which just makes it all so much easier. Why wouldn't you make it easier for yourself?
Exactly. The blues is all about, it's all about open tuning. And also slide playing. Bottleneck playing, where you slide in a bottleneck or you slide in a piece of metal over the strings. And I spent years, I took to that like a duck to water, with the Elmore James style of playing really early on. And then when I was into playing with Steve a few years later, I was getting into all kinds of country bottleneck stuff and hillbilly music and you name it. And the whole thing's so totally rich. So the orthodox way of playing guitar never appealed to me anyway. I would be a guitar teacher's nightmare.
Well, look at Jimi Hendrix, for example.
There's one.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Jimi Hendrix.
Well, he's number one in your incendiary Rolling Stone Top 100. If you go onto YouTube now, the kids go onto YouTube now, there's loads of hacks from brilliant teachers who make it easier for kids to be any good on the guitar, which is, I mean, that's what we're speaking to now. It just took so longer to harvest that information back in the day because YouTube didn't exist.
But or your guitar teacher would disapprove.
Yeah, I
literally
know.
Disapprove of what you were doing.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for turning me off something that I've dreamt about every day.
Well, yeah, but there's so many more are in favour now.
Yeah.
And they're
it's
just
great
happy to see kids engaged.
It's so cool, man. It's so, so cool. When you started Dire Straits in 1977, you were 27. So that's not student no. union age, is it?
No, and not being 17 is the reason I'm alive, you know. I think that's the one thing that saved me. Because if you're 27 and not 17, you've already become, I'd been out and done a million jobs and sort of learned how the world works a little bit. And you, when you're 17, you don't have a clue about that.
There are no breaks.
There's not, you don't know what a inquest is, what a law court is, what a anything is, and how it all works. So you can't blame kids who are being the ones who are being idolized. Kids being worshipped is bloody dangerous.
And you still struggle with it, even from the age of 27, didn't you?
I did. Actually, I still found it really hard to adjust to, and I was mentioning that to Tom Jones at one point, because he'd come to see the show and we were chatting, and I'd said, you know, I found it when we got really successful, it was just dislocating for him, discombobulating, you know, the beginner wasn't. And Tom said, oh, I was ready.
Yeah, he always ready, born ready, wasn't he? But he was, it was made for him, that suit was made for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And when he let out of the bow, you know, the arrow was loosed. I mean, there was so much, he had so much to give. And I still remember watching him doing a duet with Jerry Lee Lewis. And believe you me, it was a 50-50 deal.
Yeah.
He was just a rocking cat.
Yeah, you know. I mean, but he landed fully formed, didn't he, I suppose? You know, and the thing about Tom Jones is he's like special ops. He goes in there, he gets the job done, and he says, okay, where's the next, where are we going to now? You know, whereas when you're in a band, you're writing songs, you know, there's different dynamics in every minute of every day.
That's right.
Whether the band's on stage, you know, whether you're on tour, whether you're in the van or not. Somebody said yesterday, which is really interesting, Mark, I don't know what you think about this, he said, without the transit van, where would rock and roll be today?
Oh, I mean, it's such an evocative thing, especially if you've got the, you know, the one with the double bogey with the double wheels at the back. It's what it does. It's just the look and, you know, a couple of aircraft seats in the front for the band members, you know.
Well, they said it was the first van, it was the first vehicle where the band as a whole could travel together with their gear.
That's right.
And without the transit van, you might not have Pink Floyd, for example, even though theirs was a Bedford van, but it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a different deal now. The whole thing is different. And, you know, everybody knows the scene is different. And I think, though, still gigging is, if you can get a gig, is still saving bands. And so, say if you do manage to scrape a gig at a college or something like that, even if it does not paying as much as maybe they used to pay in the old days, it can get you a start. But now the internet's all about the internet, and you're using the net intelligently. It was always hard. It was always hard to get into music. I think it was always hard to be an actor. I think it was always hard to be a DJ. It was always hard to be a journalist even. You know, it was hard to get jobs in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and I think it's hard now. More and more songs being piled, you know, into the mix now. You're up against another 10,000 songs.
Yeah, every day.
Every week or every month. It's a frightening number.
It's funny, though, isn't it? Because we had to be able to get in a building. There was a building in the way of us, or some doors, or literally physical doors. How do I get in that building? Let alone how do I get the job? How do I get in that building?
Into that building.
Because if I'm outside that building, I'm not part of the deal.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
So interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and in the kids that I knew in who were in recording in studios and stuff knew how to sleep under the consoles because it was warmer. There were carpets in studios back then.
It was peaceful.
And, you know, if the boss wanted you to work late, you'd work late until however late it was. I think there's quite a divorce rate.
We were all on 0 hours then. No question about that. And minimum wage, if paid at all.
Yeah, but that means that you want to do the
job. Of course.
100%. So you had to really want it.
Yeah, we were paid with magic.
Yeah.
Think so.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
So 1977, in the middle of the epicenter, the eye of the storm that was punk rock, out of pub rock, your band was formed, which I think is the most punk thing that could have happened. Because you said, no, pub rock's where it's at, you know, and that's literally where you started, and that's from whence the seed of Dire Straits came. What was that like? I think it's always better to drive against the flow of traffic out of London when everybody else is coming in. Same kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right. People loved it from the get-go, and we'd be playing down the Hope and Anchor somewhere or down the Cellars in London, and next week there'd be more people down queuing down the stairs. And then the next week there'd be more people up the stairs and round the corner, down the street, we chucked on a tour with the Talking Heads, and we put all stuffed in a little mini bus and going round, and sometimes we got encores, you know, so if the Talking Heads crowd came out, we looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
So
couldn't have been more different musically.
We were different musically, but I have a lot of happy memories from that. I was once changing my strings in a hotel up in the North Sheffield somewhere, and the Talking Heads came by and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm changing my strings." "How do you do that?" You know, and so I had to show them. what you do. But it was funny, you know, and we had a lot of laughs, actually.
Oh, gosh, so much fun. So much fun and so many great tunes. And then, of course, you were in a fortunate position that you didn't have to rent studios anymore. So when did you buy your studio, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, the studio's 20 years ago, I think, because I was tired of trying to do a studio in the place where I lived. And we lived in a little muse house. And I tried to make that into a studio unsuccessfully. All the bottom end would disappear down the spiral staircase. And the window would have to be open to keep the place cool. And there'd be jets flying over and people yelling in the street. So I thought, I've got to do this properly. I've got to try doing this properly. And I found an old children's book warehouse in Chiswick and just, you know, got the bit between my teeth and went and did it properly. And I'm so glad I did because I've never had a bad day in there. And it's a wonderful experience, especially the high points being when you can get the guys in the band in there and you've got a man in every corner and you're putting the songs down. And with this last album, of course, it took a little bit longer, but because it was a pandemic and one thing and another, but it's a joy to work in there.
Good for you. One Deep River is the album. It's out now. There is a title track from the album. There's a song called Two Pairs of Hands, which is the current single. We're going to play it in a bit. Is Two Pairs of Hands about you being on stage, or the sense of you being on stage and it all going off and you just literally hanging on for dear life? Is that where we are with
yes.
that song?
Yeah. Well, yes, well interpreted. Yeah, it is, because, you know, with those boys, you've got to be on your game. You know, I mean, these guys can have played before and, you know, you've got to. But I enjoy it being in there, because being a songwriter is not like being a musician. You know, they let me get away with stuff, because, you know, if I said, oh, I'm sorry about the Greenies there before, they said, and one of them said, oh, well, the singer is always right, you know. And so.
Yeah. And some singers are worth it, and you're more than worth it, I would imagine.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't lost them yet. So, no, they're lovely guys, and it's a beautiful, you know. I think when you're making a song together, you're listening to a whole big texture, and trying to put yourself into it somewhere, and so it's not about showing off what a great drummer you are or anything. It's about finding the place that's the right place in the song. And that takes quite a lot of experience, and you'll hear things people are playing while you're playing the song. You're not just concentrating on your own part. You've learned to get in with the whole fabric of the thing. And I saw two of them giving each other a hug after one take. I said, "What was that about?" He said, "Well." He said, "Yanto, he heard me." He said, "Because I did two takes, and then on the third take, I made a tiny change, and he heard it, and he played according to that, you know." And that's, I think, what the musicians appreciate is when they're just really playing off each other.
Yeah, you're not blinkered, you're not myopic.
Right.
You're in the mix with everybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's when a band's at its best and its strongest, isn't it?
Absolutely is.
Yeah.
That's
it's like when they say acting isn't about speaking, it's about listening. Great actors listen and that's respond true. In real time with lines that they've been given, but as a response to what they've just heard, as opposed to waiting to talk.
Totally. You couldn't have put it better. Yeah.
It's great, man. It's great. Last night was such a beautiful night to listen to this album. One Deep River is what we're talking about. And I can't believe Martin Lotfer's here. I'm actually blown away, Mark. I'm really starstruck. And I know we've met before, haven't
Lots
we?
Lots of times, yeah.
Yeah, we've been hurtling around the West Sussex countryside in that car. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
what
I do.
That was a laugh, wasn't it?
Surely do. That was one beautiful car that you've got there.
Not anymore, sadly. I thought I'd been to your studio, but I hadn't then. I'd been to your garage. And now, clearly, I won't say where it is, but I thought I thought your studio was somewhere behind the bit I went to.
All right, no, they're not, and they weren't in the same place. No, I don't own some of that. I don't own that building anymore.
Right, but that was You always know you're going to a cool building when it has those old-fashioned, you know, the security concertina shutters. You think, oh, this is cool. This is like we're in a bit of a film. This could be. It's like some Cold War action going on here. We might never be seen again.
Yeah. Actually, that building, I think it was an old Volvo garage
it
or
was,
something.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
What a great place, mate.
Yeah, I know.
So we definitely did drive in the car. I've not imagined that. I have been to your garage, but not your studio. This thing about what have I misremembered about this live Channel 4 broadcast of Dire Straits playing in a desert? What am I getting wrong about this? You're saying, no, never done that. Played Wolverhampton, but no deserts thus far. Didn't Channel 4 do a big premiere of a Dire Straits album one year?
No.
That I sat at home to watch?
No, it was probably, could be one of the sort of tribute.
No. God, one of us is getting this wrong, and it's probably me because you were in Dire Straits.
Ask your listeners, and somebody might know. I don't know.
It's funny though, isn't it? In the '80s, because when you had an album out, MTV was massive, of course, at the time, featured in one of your songs, one of your most famous songs. They were monumental moments. Those video premieres, weren't they? Those global previews. Just speak to that. What was that like being around at that time? It's not typically as an MTV band yet, ironically. Embraced by all video, all broadcast media.
Well, big. I do remember big occasions. I mean, I do remember walking out to do the Mandela the Nelson Mandela, that we were supposed to be headlining that. And it was the noise when we were announced in the stadium. And I remember walking out, grabbing my guitar and walking on, and I could hear my sound guy. I was coming through from the sound desk out on the pitch, and he's saying, "I can't sing. I can't hear everybody." So I thought, "Oh no, Robert can't hear anything out on the pitch." And I thought he was complaining, but I think he was just laughing because because he couldn't hear anything, you know. And so it's that's the kind of thing. But you funny thing is, you get through shows like that, and it's curious. You've burnt through a bit of adrenaline, maybe, but you know, I had to go home, and I knew that I had to feed the fish. I knew that was something that I had to do.
That was your anchor.
I just knew I had to. That was a little duty that I had to do that I'd promised Kitty I would do. I'd promised that I would do, and I did, and. It's just that feeling of, and I didn't know about the gig until I walked out the next morning to buy a newspaper and somebody said, "That was a great gig last night."
Yeah. Well, that's how that's why the Beatles gave up, wasn't it? Because they couldn't hear themselves play anymore. That's why they stopped playing live.
Really?
So you had an idea.
Yeah.
When they played Shea Stadium, they and they had to pipe whatever they could through the public tannoy system.
Yeah, but the monitor system got better. So by the time we were touring in the end, we had in-ears, which would be attached to our belts, and we have a little...
Was that a game changer, the old in-ears?
Oh, yeah. I think it did, and it really enabled... enabled everybody to listen to a basic same mix, and that you're sort of playing the same song together.
Yeah. Lots of people have been as excited as me, not quite as excited as me, but you coming on, and lots of people WhatsApping us as we're talking, and people saying things like, "Amazing to hear Mark on the show this morning," and in firm, big old WhatsApp there, and Al Piddington, favourite album of all time. Eve says, "Please, can you tell Mark that my son became a professional guitarist due to his influence and listening to Dire Straits on long car journeys as a young boy?" I know that you hear those stories like that all the time, but they never get less magical, do they?
Oh, no, I love to hear the stories. I hear them every day, and that's such a joy in my life. I mean, because you realise the songs are signposts for people's lives.
Yeah, yeah.
And what people want to do is to say, "We used to do this," and it's the what you used to do as well. That's important. "We used to do this and listen to you. We used to do this when we were listening to you. We used to..." And it's all of life was lived, you know, and from birth to death, you know, and so it's humbling, actually.
And it's so deep, isn't it? It's in you. When you have an experience like that, it stays with you forever. It's deeper than a diary. It's better than that.
Yeah, it's a life seen in slices of in pieces of, you know, involvement with music and what they used to live with the music, to celebrate with it, you know, to be going out to it, to be going on holiday with it, and, you know, like car trips out.
Falling in love with it.
Yeah. Exactly. And, and falling out of love as well, but then you can sort of tell people who are falling out of love for the first time that, you know, you can sort of say, well, you'll come a time when you'll be able to laugh at that.
Yeah, yeah.
Laugh at this.
Because
they're too young. They're young. And, they're not there yet. They're not past it yet. You know, that was the Romeo and Juliet thing, you know.
What a tune. Oh, Mark Knopfler. So here you are. You're sitting here in front of us, 74 years young. How does it feel, Mark?
Oh, it feels fabulous. Yeah. Isn't it? Life is great, and I'm very lucky to be here. I'm aware of how crowded the dance floor is out there, you know. So nobody knows better than me. I'm pretty amazed that people still want to be part of it and get into it and know about it and play the songs and learn the songs or whatever it is they want to do with the songs and live with the songs. And I'm delighted about the way it all is. I suppose I'm moving a bit slower, and I get overtaken on the pavement by old ladies going down to the post office to get their pension books.
No, you don't. All right, I'm going to stop you there.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
It won't be like this forever, so just enjoy it while it's here. It's a really wonderful thing.
And James Bay.
It's about me. It's about my relationship with Lucy. It sums up so much of what went into writing this whole album. We're all works in progress. I still don't necessarily know who I am.
And Depeche Mode's Dave Gahan remembering the late, great Andy Fletcher.
I'll be honest with you, the first thought that came in my head was, I wish I'd been a bit kinder.
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.